Okay, it's 6 o'clock and we will call our meeting to order and welcome everyone this evening. Our first item of business is the approval of the agenda for May 13th, 2026.
I move.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Next item is the acceptance of the minutes of April 22nd, 2026. Are there any changes required to these minutes? Hearing none, we can accept them as presented. Next item, business arising from the minutes. Anything to come before council this evening? Hearing none, we'll move on to a proclamation, Lyme Disease Month. Whereas Lyme disease is a serious illness caused by the bite of a black-legged tick infected with the bacterium Borrelia burgdorferi, and whereas black-legged ticks carrying a variety of diseases or illnesses can now be found in all parts of Nova Scotia, and whereas awareness, education, and practicing preventative measures such as daily tick checks and proper tick removal can help reduce your chances of contracting tick-borne diseases. Therefore, be it resolved that I, Warden Penny Smith, on behalf of the municipality of the District of Shelburne, do hereby proclaim May 2026 as Lyme Disease Awareness Month. Moving on, we have one presentation this evening regarding sustainable desalination project proposal, and that's Onica Technologies. And I see Mr. Tutick.
Yeah.
Is with us?
Yes, it's me.
Hello. Hi. And welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Smith. And thank you for having us.
Yes, so we'll do a round of introductions for you. I'm Penny Smith. I'm the warden for the municipality of Shelburne and councillor for District 2, which includes communities from Roseway through to Reeds Hill. And I'll go to my far left.
Councillor Dale Richardson in District 7 goes from county line to Lockport.
I'm Ron Cool. I'm from District 6, and that's from East Jordan to Lockport.
Hi, so my name is Sherry Thorpe in Irvine, District 3, which is Sandy Point. So that's a peninsula, and I'm down to about 2272, and then District 5 adjoins, and she'll introduce herself in a minute.
All right, Warren McLeod, mm-hmm. CIO.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Deputy Warden Heidi Wagner. I'm District 5, so I'm Lower Sandy Point, Jordan Branch, right through to East Jordan.
Thank you, Shane, and I'm Municipal Counselor for District 4, which covers Woodlawn, Ohio, and the Welshtown area.
Nicole Blades, Executive Assistant.
And we do have Councillor Sutherland joining us virtually if she wants to introduce herself as well.
Hello, Councillor Sutherland, District 1, from Beaver Dam to Red Head Road, just past Dinkerman.
Okay, thank you.
Nice to meet you all. Thanks a lot. Yes. Myself, I'm Dragan Tutic, CEO and founder at Onica Technologies, based out of Sherbrooke, Quebec.
Okay, and welcome. And the floor is yours.
Thank you. So I'll jump in and share in my screen, and maybe even before that, so some background. So we launched Onica about 10 years ago, where after traveling for like 3 years, we discovered the challenges of water scarcity globally, and thinking like we're in Quebec, we have like Canada, plenty of water resources. So in the past couple weeks, had the chance to exchange with Warren and other folks in the region, and seeing that there is visibly some increasing water challenges in the area. So we're glad that we have the chance to meet and discuss and potentially find solutions together. So with that being said, I'll dive right in. So can you just confirm you can see my screen correctly?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. So yeah, we're pleased to be here. Really, the idea is to present a sustainable desalination project to secure a new water source from the ocean without impeding the environment. And from what we saw and heard over the past couple of years, water stress has been increasing in the regions, really with changing rain patterns, and even some residents have to travel to find new water sources, sometimes in different districts, towns, and areas. And especially in the summer, where there is more demand for water, but at the same time, less supply of natural water. And it can have also some meaningful impact on both the real estate industries as fisheries, maritime, and tourism activity. But at the same time, the whole region is surrounded by the ocean. And there is ways to secure water from the ocean without impacting the environment. And at Onika, we do it in two different ways. The first way is, maybe some of you have heard about it, it's wave-powered desalination systems. So it's essentially systems that are installed offshore. As the units wobble in the ocean, they actually do a pumping action that pumps the seawater through reverse osmosis membranes, desalinate it, and send it to the coast with an underwater pipe. And these systems are modular, so you can increase the number of these units to provide a larger amount of water, and essentially providing water to local water distribution municipalities without creating any greenhouse gas emissions, without using any land. And the other environmental aspects, whether it's the safe brine release, water intakes, can also facilitate permitting as well. The second approach is solar power integrated systems that are also modular, but instead of using the motion of the waves, it's actually solar panels with electrical system that also has energy storage control that adapt depending on the natural availability of sunlight. Also, everything is integrated in one piece, so it doesn't require the grid to operate. And on top of it, we ensure that it is zero emission, as you can imagine, that it's also safe for marine life, for brine diffusal as well. And it can be really decentralized. So no need to have like a really big desal plant, as we see. So this can be adapted to smaller municipalities as well. And essentially for every site, we look at the different availability and factors for which approach is better. And in this context, with the local wave regime, and from our conversation, the solar powered approach is more appropriate in this context compared to, for example, in the Californian coast or Chile coast, where the wave action is really it's like 3 to 4 times more energy in the waves than there is locally available, making it a more financially interesting approach in this context. In terms of business model, it's really like securing a water source. So we take care of everything that is involved in the project, from the site evaluation, engineering, permitting activities, to have essentially really the water supply. So for the municipality, this would mean essentially securing a water volume from Onika for a 10 to 20 year period. And there is also a possibility to buy out the project during that time frame as well. And this enables to secure a long-term water supply without the financial risk to invest in a project and find also different groups to do the commissioning, operation, permitting, and overall really stabilizing that by diversifying the water sources and not be stuck in the last minute to find trucking water or other solutions for in much larger amounts. And there is also a potential for scale up of a project, where even though we can start at smaller scale, where the price per cubic meter is higher. Over long run, if the municipality likes this approach, the residents are happy, there's a possibility to increase the amount of water and reduce the cost of water with that. So by looking at the different sites possibilities, at this time, one of the interesting potential site is the Adamant Drive area, where there could be the installation of the intake outfall. And the whole system would fit within a lot that actually could welcome many times over this project's size. So it could be increased over time. The site would produce about 100 cubic meter per day, a bit over, in the summertime. And obviously during the months that there is less need or no need, essentially it could be put on pause during that time frame. So just a little walkthrough of what's included in that system. So there is an array of solar panels. These are connected to a battery and energy storage system that is also connected to the main unit. The main unit actually will be receiving the seawater from the ocean. Inside it, there is some pretreatment of the seawater. There is all the power and control systems that manage the power coming from the sun to what's required to do all the desalination process. There's obviously all the desalination components, safety systems. There's also post-treatment to ensure that the water is potable as well. And the water being produced is sent to a water reservoir. From that water reservoir, it's connected to a meter for all the billing elements. And the system is connected to a water filling station, where in this context, people or companies will be able to come there, fill their water, and bring it to their locations. Just for the water supply, it's not right at the coast, but it would be connected essentially with horizontal drilling or trenching to get water directly from the seawater and ensure that the brine concentration is diluted enough to not have any impacts on marine life. So that would be worked out with DFO. And that brings in the seawater to operate the system. And based on the potential scaling of the system, those could be sized in a way that we don't need to redo them if the project is scaled up down the road. For the distribution of the water, there's different systems on the market that exist. This is one example. This is an example that's actually used in Yarmouth. From what we discussed, we can take care of that part as well for the commissioning, installation, operation. All the payment, though, would be processed and sent back to the municipality. So whenever residents would be using it, setting the pricing and all those, that would be left to the municipality to decide. But all the financing part, the maintenance, ensuring that it's properly operated, maintenance, our team could take care of that at the same time as we take care of the desalination plant itself. In terms of water volumes, the project is currently sized about at the smallest scale that makes sense for this approach, technology, and doing this whole project. It represents about $250,000 per year, starting from March up to October. There can be some adjustments in terms of the timing of the volumes and commitments. And there is a possibility for a certain ramp up. That would be essentially based. There'll be also a trade-off in terms of duration of the contract. And obviously all the elements can be detailed in a contract. So all these water volumes are essentially a commitment from the municipality for a minimum amount to be bought from our systems. But for Onika, we would be executing all the project, financing it, doing the engineering, doing all the permitting, licensing, installation, commissioning, the distribution, the operation, maintenance of it during this whole time. On a cubic meter basis or on a per liter basis, it represents about 1 cent per liter for the water. And as we include also the water distribution system within the project, the project initiation fee would include the water distribution system would be about $95,000. And down the road, by scaling the project, that's the biggest driver to reduce the cost of water. That could reduce the cost by over 75% by making a larger project down the road. And this pricing is based on a contract term of 15 years, and it's on a take or pay structure. And there's also the possibility for a project buyback that depending if down the road you prefer to buy the whole project and take it over, that can also be negotiated. So what this means in terms of responsibilities, expenses during the first year, it's about $120,000 to $145,000 that would be for the initiation fee, the land preparation. There is also some fencing for the water security. And for the water delivered, for that part, it really depends on the timing. There's namely that we're already in May, so I think time is advancing. But for permitting, it's a bit uncertain exactly the timing at which it would be commissioned. But this is taken into account like half the month of August to the end of the year, be roughly $65,000. But that would be only based on the water. And within this whole project during the first year, there is a possibility for some of the amounts to be partial payments that would be deferred to the next year if that's a concern. And really here, the objective that we have would be to secure this new water source that is independent from the grid, natural rain patterns, long-term, essentially the price stays stable just with inflation, and really making the municipality more resilient and have a new water source, and really diversifying the option to supply water. And on top of it, while securing water, it's also for the environment, it doesn't compromise the environment. It does exist desalination system, but those actually generate a lot of CO2 emissions, especially in a place like Nova Scotia where primary energy source is actually coal, sadly. So this doesn't increase any emissions. And yeah, as we mentioned, really, I think one of the elements here is seeing the proactiveness of the municipality and for the residents, seeing that this is also being looked at by the municipality, which we assume would be a good positive well-perceived and received by the residents. And in terms of discussion, essentially we're, in terms of steps for us to be able to commit to all these, to start executing the project, it's essentially with the contract in hand and with the initiation fees. And with this, we actually can really dive into all the permitting, procurement and execution of the project. And to give an order of magnitude for the timing, the goal would be to have something up and running before the end of the year. As we mentioned, one of the questions is the permitting aspect in terms of preparation, manufacturing. That's something that would be feasible, but the sooner that first phase can be completed, the sooner we can start, but for sure be ready for next year's season. But the goal is to start operating this year and be ready to react depending on the water availability locally. So that gives a little idea, and happy to, there's probably many questions in people's mind right now, so happy to expand into any elements that you'd like us to have more detail or need more clarity.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for that presentation. I know I have a number of questions. I'm not sure if anyone else does at this point, or I can start with mine, or Councillor Shand.
It sounds like a really, really cool project. really interesting to actually see, like, to would be really interesting to actually watch this get put together and how that actually works. It's very interesting, and could be a really great thing for the community. I guess my biggest things are looking at the price tag that comes with it. Mm-hmm. The $145,000 for the startup cost, basically for year one. And then one of the slides said about $250,000 a year. So is that what it would cost us after year one to run it? Or is that including the water that would be coming out of it that we would be selling to residents?
So the $145,000, the main part of it, actually, I'll just share it at the same time. One of the main aspects, typically the model would be there is just a mobilization fee, which is like a commitment between $80,000. Then in some cases, the land is already ready to receive the whole system. In this case, that land, there is some land preparation to be able to put the project in that location. So that fee enables to buy, prepare that land and also get a water distribution system that normally actually would be something that would be on the client side to take care of and buy it for the water distribution. In this context, like from our conversation, there is a preference to not have the municipality have its own certified operator. So we would be operating the whole system. So the $145,000 includes the water distribution system that will cost roughly between $60,000 to $100,000, depending on the cost of the installation, the size, pumping, and other parameters. And the third part, I'm sorry, was about, there was a, yeah, just the side fencing, that's something that can be discussed, but just like make sure the water, there's nobody that can touch the water just because of safety concerns on that. And the following years or from that moment, it's really priced on a per cubic meter basis. And if that part of the water distribution would be on our side, essentially represents about 6% of the water cost increase. Like if there would be no initial cost, the water price would be somewhere between 6 to 10% more expensive. But with this, it actually reduces the price per cubic meter, including that water distribution system. And I don't mind going over it again if I made it even more unclear.
CAO, did you wish to comment on that?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify something. So for the 15 years, there'd be a charge there for about $250,000 per year that we pay Onica. But on the distribution side, we can recover revenue from what we charge residents to buy the water. So that would offset either all of it or a portion of it, depending on how you price it.
Yeah. Is that, yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Clarify that a little more.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Warren.
I can scratch that off mine too, because I had $250,000 there and then the 120 to 145. So thank you for that explanation. For that, Councillor Thorburn Irvine.
Thank you. I had the pleasure of attending your session in person in Barrington, and so there's a great deal of complexity to all of this. And given that I had gone to that, it was recently that I was talking to one of the councillors in Barrington, and I just generally and I know fully you may not be able to speak to the Barrington model, because that's a different contract in a different municipal unit. But I did ask, how's it going? And they were very positive on it. And to our CAOs, I guess that's the question mark. How much would there be uptake in water demand? I mean, it's a variable, obviously, because droughts are not predictable. But the councillor from Barrington had felt like this was going to pay for itself. So that's a very general comment. So, money always is a big decision maker. It's a most important service going forward in terms of building our resiliency. So typically, is there a way to predict consumer take up on this? It's a question mark.
So really, personally, don't have a crystal ball to see what's going to be. But maybe one thing that could be mentioned is that it's hard to foresee a situation where the natural water supply will improve just by itself. So the trend is really the other way around, where rain comes, there's way less rain. And when it comes, it's like really sudden as well. So often what happens is like the natural aquifers don't even have enough time to regenerate as they would have been normally witnessing. And that's a pattern that we see in so many places around the globe. Even like
just blows off.
We're seeing something similar to what happens in California, where it's not raining for a while and suddenly there's really big rain. And it's so much rain that it just goes right back in the ocean without having the time to fill the aquifers as we would have been normally filling in the past decades. So we foresee an increasing demand. And this is the idea of this is really diversifying. Like obviously there will be still natural water available, but this is one way to diversify the sources of water. And there is some variability in the demand, obviously. Mm-hmm. There is some, like in terms of the water consumption, like it's focused in the summer, ideally, like the water consumption to fit the worst months possible, like increasing at the beginning of the year and kind of the tail end toward October. After October, from what we see, there won't be that much demand. So try to adapt with that uncertainty. And Onica as a company, we take some of that risk by doing the whole project, and it's essentially a shared uncertainty by both parties.
Yeah, thank you. So that's understood. And the proactivity is pretty critical, and it's nice to have options. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. CAO?
Thank you. I do have some data for council to consider. West Hants sells bulk water to its rural residents. They sell around about last year 22,000 cubic meters. This model is based on about 26,000. And Yarmouth, I've got the data in liters. I was just trying to quickly mentally trying to do a calculation there. I think it's around about 21 or 22,000 cubic meters. We're in terms of civic addresses compared to less West Hants, we're about 40% of the civic addresses. If you did a calculation, the estimation might be about 8,900 cubic meters. So the risk in this model is, are we going to be able to get up to 26,000 cubic meters and sell the water to residents to cover the costs? And that is the question mark, the big question mark.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to jump in now because some of these questions that I have, I think we're really discussing them all together now, which is great. We all have, you know, those concerns or those questions, I guess, on our minds. So, but that was one of the points that I thought had to be made, was exactly what the CAO just said. You know, we're talking about different areas that, I mean, we're nowhere near their population or probably their usage. So one of my questions before that comment was, how do we know at this point how large to go with this infrastructure? Yeah. And so I don't know how small we can start out and then increase, or whether that's a possibility, or whether you have to go with, you know, this is the size and that's that, or.
So one,
and I'm
one
not sure of the, if you covered that.
Yeah, so one of the possibilities that can be discussed, like in terms of the whole project scale, it's pretty much the smallest that it can be to make financial sense.
Okay.
Although one of the possibilities is to have like an increase in the like first 2 years or so. So instead of like starting year one with that full water commitment, we would still be able to produce more, but at least like the commitment on the municipal side to be increasing over the first like two, like 1/3 the first year, 2/3 the second year, and the full amount the third year, and essentially extending a bit the contract to compensate for that first initial ramp up. So that would be, with the idea behind it would be that the situation is most likely not going to improve, so that the water consumption would increase. So that would kind of offset some of that, some of the risk associated with that.
Right, because with a lot of projects, the first couple of years, you know, even for people to know what we're offering, it is, you know, there's a lot of communication that has to happen for that as well. Mm. So my concern is I don't want a $265,000 bill at the end of the year and there be no uptake on using, you know, utilizing that that service that's now there. And
there are some other approaches that can be discussed on the contract side. That's a bit like complicated to detail, but understanding that there is some risk about the water consumption. One of the things, for example, that was discussed with Barrington regarding that approach was in the site location. To be in a location where there is some water distribution already and a larger water consumption area. So actually there is a water distribution and all the excess water is actually redistributed in the network. So actually that there is no water being wasted. It's actually re-injected in the system. So actually it doesn't all come from the ground. It just supplements the local water supply. So it's made available for a population. And at the same time, any excess water could be distributed to that local infrastructure. So that's one way. So if there is some areas in Shelburne that consume a certain amount of water, it could be connected to that area. So any water that is not used by local population or entrepreneurs distributing the water, all the rest of the water could be injected in the network as well. And that could actually just diversify the water sources of the water distribution network for industrial user or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we're looking at, it appears that it's about a 6-month timeline from start to finish for a project like this.
Yeah, roughly 6 months, exactly.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I noted on one of your slides, it included a statement regarding marine life, and I think you had mentioned as well that, but I guess I'll just ask the question because it was certainly on my mind about whether or not there are any environmental concerns with a project like this.
Yeah, so definitely, like with desalination, there's different ways that it can be done. In some cases, to optimize operations, you can use really lots of chemicals to maintain the membranes and stuff like that. But the way we design it, we keep the recovery, meaning the water percentage that goes through the membrane as low as possible. So the brine is not too concentration in salt. The way that the outfalls, intake and outfall are made, we ensure that the dilution is quick enough to not impede the marine life. And obviously, like all the emissions that a typical system would be, sometimes there's a lot of, especially for example, in California or any environmentally conscious areas, there's a lot of pushback for desalination because of all the emissions that it do. The system does not do any of it. Also intakes, the intake must be safe. In this case, like the filtration at the intake is very, very fine. So there's no marine life that gets sucked in into the system. And anything related to the permits or concerns about environment, essentially we take over that responsibility. So we'll have to negotiate with the Nova Scotia Environment and Climate Change Department, for example, for all the permits. And obviously that's not too for the environment, but all the health aspects, like there is different monitoring that need to be put in place, sampling to ensure that the water is safe to drink.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And just another question regarding, I guess about other municipalities or other areas in the province that you've installed something similar to this size. Where do you have examples throughout this province?
So so Barrington would be the first one in the area. Right now we're commissioning two projects, one in Chile and one in California this time with the wave powered systems. And for this solar based system, we've already fabricated a full system at our headquarters in Canada. That one would be the one that we anticipate be deployed at the Barrington site to begin. And we would be manufacturing another one for this project.
Okay. And my last question again comes down to cost. So how much would it cost for someone to be filled up, I guess, from, you know, someone providing the water source? Like what kind of cost would there be for that resident? Because so, I mean, we're trying to help as well, keeping in mind our most vulnerable and those who can't, you know, potentially can't afford to pay $150 for a truck to come with some water. So
in a water tote, like in a pickup truck that could last for a few days, it really depends on the consumption of the cows. That would be that the cost of Onika to the municipality would be about $10, $9.60. And then the municipality could have a price structure that maybe some people, like the first tote is a certain price, and if somebody takes more of them, like the price increases based on the level of consumption. So the whole structure, we leave that to municipality structure, but the cost to the municipality for a cubic meter would be about a little under $10 for one cubic meter.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think realistically, if I were to ask, you know, to get filled up, what I'd be looking at for a cost.
Yeah, so $10, but that depends on what the municipality would charge. Big one.
CAO?
Yeah, so most of the residents that were picking up water at the Shelburne Fire Department last year were using cubic meter totes, which would be probably what they, for this project, most people would be using a cubic meter tote. So if we wanted to break even, we were charging $10 to fill up a cubic meter.
And saving the idea is also to save a lot of driving time for the population, like doing a 40-minute drive. It's quite a long time also for all people doing that. So ideally have it centrally located in Shelburne, so it's just a quick drive to get there and not save a lot of time and gas and fuel. It's probably more expensive for anybody filling at Yarmouth, the transport in time, more than the water tote itself being filled out.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Shan?
I just have one more question about, so if it's a 15-year contract and we, you know, we're paying X amount of dollars for that, so does that include any repairs or anything, if anything were to break, that's covered in that amount, or is there no additional for us?
Yeah, there's absolutely no additional costs to the municipality. So anything that breaks, solar panel that gets stolen, anything that's happening on the system, like, we're responsible for it. If we need to replace the electrical motors, or there's corrosion on some electrical parts, anything happening except force majeure, like, I don't know, earthquake, right? Well, there's like a cure of 6 months to take care of that, where both parties could break in force majeure their obligation temporarily. But anything related to the operation, if we need to replace the intake, whatever, we hope we won't have to do that. But that's all on us.
And what is the expected lifespan of the system? Like, is 15 years is the contract? Do you expect that this will last 30, or do you expect this will last 15? Like,
yeah, it will most likely last more than 15 years. It could last, typically for very large projects, those contracts were between 20 to 30 years. This is a smaller scale. So perhaps within 15 years, the system will be much better, and maybe better upgrading it. Through that 15 years, there will be several components that are changed, whether it's the pumps, the seals, the membranes. A lot of it is replaced over time. There's a certain components that we expect not to be replaced within that time frame. For example, the solar panels. And the way that the structure, the contract is structured, there is some residual value at the end. So the city, the municipality could buy the project at the end. The whole system is expected to last longer. So at the very end of the project, either we renew the O&M contract with a perhaps lower price per cubic meter after that, or the municipality takes it over and have its own staff operated, for example.
Okay, thank you. Excellent questions. Any other questions or comments regarding this? It sounds, it's a very interesting concept, that's for sure. And I think you're spot on when you mentioned about the drought and the fact that, you know, it's likely not going to get any better as we continue. Mm-hmm. But we want to be proactive and to consider all the options that there may be available for the municipality to provide a service like this to our residents. Mm-hmm. So really appreciate your time, your presentation. Mm-hmm. And if there aren't any other questions from anyone, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us as well. And we'll remain available for any follow-up questions. So,
okay, thanks a lot. Wonderful. Yeah. Thank you. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Okay, very interesting. We're going to move on to recreation and parks. And we have one item for Mr. Dedrick, Community Representatives Appointment, Eastern Shelburne County Equity and Anti-Racism Committee. Welcome.
Good evening. We advertised for community representatives, which are members of the public, for the Equity and Anti-Racism Committee. And we received four submissions at that time. And so the process that's involved, which is as per the terms of reference, we have what's called a nominating committee. So the council representatives from each of the three units make up that nominating committee. And then also any staff resources that may be involved. So those four submissions were taken to the nominating committee and reviewed. And so that committee made the recommendation to appoint the four individuals. So the town of Shelburne and the town of Lockport have both approved these appointments, and so we're the remaining municipal unit. Those four individuals, we have Louise DeLille, Davey Hartley, Catherine Hartley, also known as Kat Hartley, and Corey Lavender. And so I'll just real briefly go through kind of their information. So this is the information. Essentially, we use an expression of interest form, which has some real general information. But the main part of it was kind of like, why do you want to be involved with the committee? Kind of give us your reasons. So we just asked for some general information from them. And so Louise DeLille, who is a resident of the town of Shelburne. So Louise was raised in Shelburne, town of Shelburne, and she has been involved with this type of work with equity and racism discrimination kind of all her life. And she's been active in numerous organizations, many listed here, the Black Cultural Society, Southwestern Regional Providers Network, African Nova Scotian Justice Institute. And you're probably aware of the two local groups, SEED and CEJ, Center for Environmental Justice. She was one of the main founders of both of those two groups as well. And Louise was also part of our advisory panel for the development of the Equity and Anti-Racism Plan. Second one, Davey Hartley. So Davey has also, he's been a member of the community. I think he was born and raised in Shelburne, but he's been involved with this, with community leadership development work for over 30 years. He's worked with many organizations, Black United Front, St. Mary's University, et cetera, where he's been involved with like youth initiatives, things of that nature. And he's currently the chair for the Shelburne Community Health Board. And leads kind of like local efforts to support marginalized communities. Davey was also a member of the advisory panel for the plan as well. So next up, Catherine Hartley. So in her kind of information, she is a descendant of Black loyalists. So the work for her is personally meaningful. She really wants to be involved with this type of work to create a real positive change. And she really believes in trying to have, you know, open discussions about this type of types of initiatives. It seems like she just is very sincere in how she wants to be involved with the committee. And then finally, Corey Lavender, he would be a resident of the municipality as well, who currently lives in Gunning Cove, originally from Liverpool, but he does have, you know, he's part of the Black Lotus family and many ties to Shelburne County. So his work has been involved with race, identity, African Nova Scotian history, and he's also, he writes poetry and mixed identity, Black loyalist heritage, leads workshops in poetry, and serves on the Writers Federation of the Nova Scotia Board. With the terms of reference, when it comes to community representatives, we're trying to have a diverse number of those, but also representation from the three units. So currently, we have a town of Shelburne representation and the rest are from the municipality. So currently there isn't a town of Lockport representative, but also these four individuals are mainly from one equity deserving group, which is good, which is great, but we are gonna make efforts to try to have representation from the other groups, which the nominating committee, we did discuss that, but we felt it was the time to move on with to get the committee started. And then as we move along, we'll do more, I guess, engagement to try to get more representation from the other groups on the committee. And it just may take a while. With that being said, so these four individuals are who have been recommended by the nominating committee.
Okay, thank you very much for that. I think there's a phenomenal amount of knowledge and experience with those community members, and I think we're quite fortunate that they've put their name forward to be on the committee.
Yeah. Yes.
Councillor Richardson. Or, I'm sorry, Councillor Thorburn Irvine, you may have been first. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne approve the appointment of Louise Deloise, Dave E. Hartley, Kate Hartley, and Corey Lavender as community representatives for the Eastern Shelburne County Equity and Anti-Racism Advisory Committee based on the recommendation of the nominating committee.
Okay, and Councillor?
I'll second that.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
We'll now move on to operations and with Ms. Dion. First is the RMRF account write-off. Welcome.
As you know, we made some transitions at our RMRF site or our CND site with a closure April 1st and reopening April 15th. And as part of that, we spent some time reviewing the accounts at the department and looking at sort of starting everything fresh under the new model. And there was one account that was identified as being uncollectible. And so the details of that are in the staff report. And we're asking that council agree that this is uncollectible and allow us to write it off.
Okay, thank you for that. There's a prepared motion if someone would like to make that. Deputy Warden?
Make the motion. Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne write off the balance of $637.12 from the RMRF account PART001 using the 2026-2027 Shared Services Bank Interest and Charges account GL00-295400-000.
Thank you. Is there a seconder? Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? I have one question about collecting. Is that something that staff reviews on a like a biannual or
The collections are done every single month.
Okay.
And this particular individual was contacted many times and was unable to bring the account to current.
Okay. Thank you for that. Any other questions or comments? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Next is the declaration of surplus equipment.
We've been working diligently to do a lot of cleaning up around the municipality at our various facilities. And one of the facilities that, you know, we've been working very hard on is our public works facility. We currently use that building for a lot of storage for various departments. And we identified that we needed to do some real cleaning up. There were some materials there stored within the site that were either declared as unsafe with our OH&S, or they were determined that they were outdated or that we no longer had staff trained to use them because they were from years ago. So with that in mind, we went through and looked at a lot of the equipment and said, you know, here are some things that still has potential useful life for someone. And even though we don't currently have a use for it, perhaps we could put them to tender as a means of cleaning out the space. So that's been identified in the addendum. And we're asking that council declare them as surplus and allow the CAO to set a minimum bid. And then we will put it out to tender.
Okay, thank you for that. There's a prepared motion if someone would like to make that.
Sure, I'll make that motion. Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne approve the declaration of all items shown in Addendum A as surplus property, and that Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne approve sale by tender with minimum bid set by the CAO, all bids plus HST.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Thank you for that. Next is green carts discussion, and I can lead that discussion. So it was brought to a couple of councillors, I guess, attention just a little bit ago regarding concerns on the municipality's current practice of requiring residents to purchase replacement green carts at their own expense when existing carts become damaged or I guess unusable. So we wanted to have a discussion on whether it would be appropriate for the municipality to explore options, I guess, for some type of a replacement program. So I think Ms. Dion, you may have some you may be able to speak to that, and perhaps as a council we can.
I just wanted to give a little bit of background on sort of the reinstatement of the green cart fees. Mm-hmm. So as you know, we have a new staff member in the waste diversion position. And as part of their training, they have sort of dove into our policies and procedures around everything related to waste. And one of the things that was discovered was that we had an operational internal procedure whereby we charged for green carts, and over time we stopped charging for green carts, and we were giving out a fairly excessive number of green carts. And when we started tracking that properly with the proper forms, we realized that one, that our own solid waste bylaw, which we have asked our shared service partners, the Town of Lockport, Town of Shelburne, to adopt the same shared services solid waste bylaw as us. Both of those two municipal units are charging for green carts, yet we were not. And then as well, we have a fee for green carts that is just cost recovery. And so we looked at the data, we looked at what our neighbors were doing, and we said, it's not clear to residents if there's different rules within the waste umbrella. So we re-implemented the policy, the internal procedure whereby you charge for a green cart. And again, our charge for a green cart is cost. There's no markup to the public. It's just the cost that we paid for them. So we did that. We started advertising to the public last fall, Facebook, website. We had front desk staff put it into their policy and procedure book where they told everyone, and as well we provided it with our new construction booklet. So when people were coming in to get a permit for a new construction, they were being told, here's your cart, here's your form for a green cart, and if you're building a brand new house that didn't exist before, you get your one cart to good to go with your new construction. But if you're coming in to replace your cart, or because you want to have two or three or four for various reasons, we don't give those out for free. Here's the form, you fill it out and we charge you for it. We really have not had any real negative feedback. And what I can say to you is that in the fiscal year 25-26, we give out 94 green cards. The majority of which were prior to when we implemented the fee. So since implementing the fee at the beginning of January, we have given out 15. So that's 5 months, a little over 5 months, 15 cards. So just to put it in perspective, if you were giving out 100 green carts a year, we would be in the thousands of dollars.
Okay, thank you for that. I'm sure there'll be questions around here, around the table. I'll start with just a couple that I have. And I guess just making a statement as well that we want all of our residents to participate in all of our waste diversion programs. Green carts aren't cheap. And we don't want people to stop separating their organics because they can't afford to do so. So I just want to put that comment out there. But so the cost right now is how much?
Well, we are at a position right now where we do have to order new ones. Mm-hmm. The cost fluctuates depending on how many you order at once. So when you order in bulk, we could get them within a range of $40 to $60.
Okay.
But if we order a smaller quantity, like under 500, we would be more closer to the 80 range.
Okay. And what is the cost to the resident?
$46.34 plus tax. I think it comes to like 53 and change. I don't have it in front of me, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So that's what
residents are paying.
Would be is about $50.
Yeah.
$50.
And that's based on the cost of the carts that we currently have in inventory, not the new cost of purchasing more.
Right. And is that the same cost that's being charged by the two towns?
That I don't know.
Okay. Okay. And
I believe it's very similar.
Okay. And the 94 green carts that you mentioned. So how many of those would be for new dwellings?
at least 15 because it included the 15, or sorry, not 15, sorry, at least three, because I have a note from the Waste Diversion Officer here that there were three given out in the beginning of the year for new builds. But if we actually looked at the building inspection report and looked at new constructions, we'd be able to.
Yes. Yeah. And I guess
we were only tracking the new ones since we started charging for them. Okay. Because we were giving them out for free to everyone before.
Yeah.
So new construction since January 1st, since we've been charging, we've given out three.
Right.
That I can tell you for sure.
Yeah. So that's, I guess, where my mind was going with that, of the 94, where they're like, you know, 80 for new dwellings and the rest were because they were damaged and needed to be replaced, or maybe the other way around. I don't know.
There would have been 81 prior to January 1st, based on the numbers in front of me.
Right.
Because we were only tracking new builds and free ones since January 1st.
Right. Okay. Great. Thank you for that. Deputy Warden, and then Councillor Richardson, and then Councillor Cool.
I have my original green card. It's 30 odd years old. So for somebody to come in, and if their card has been damaged, or the collectors have broken the lid or something, I feel that if we're enforcing this separation and we're wanting our residents to separate, if the broken card is there, we should be replacing it. It shouldn't come as a cost to the resident. If they're looking for a second green card, by all means, I'm in agreement that they should be charged. If somebody's stolen it, we can't prove that, but if they have a broken one and we're replacing it, I feel that it should be replaced at no charge to that resident.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Richardson.
I certainly understand that there's wear and tear, and I do have a lot for somebody that loses one that is broken, and I mean, eventually they will break down. The problem I have is generally if it's open, I drive by garbage day and I drive by a week later and they're still laying in the ditch or kicking around the road. Mm. So it's an abuse that I think is wide open. If we're going to entertain a replacement, which I would support if it has limitations. Mm-hmm. I have no problem that you have a green card. And if somebody comes in and it's one every 5 years, and of course, then it gets to be a tracking thing. And the other problem with that is I don't feel it's just right that we are going to hand them out when the other two are not in that system. What we have done is when we overhauled garbage collection, or what we want to call it, we're supposed to all be on the same page these days. So I do have concerns in doing that. I have sympathy for the breakdown. I know one of my residents had a problem with actually the truck backed over it. But that I think was replaced because it was an accident type thing. But so I really have concern to say that we hand them out free. Because it's not cheap and people are abusing them. And if you want to abuse it and if you have to pay to replace it, so be it. But if you're abusing it on everybody else's dime, I don't think that's right.
Thank you for that, Councillor Richardson. And just before Councillor Cool, I agree with what you're saying. I think if we do ask staff to explore options for us, that there has to be some parameters, I guess, for that. And one of the things that you had suggested, perhaps, you know, with the one every 5 years or whatever the case may be, and even what Deputy Warden had said, you know, if someone is coming in and saying they want an extra green card, well, then you pay for that. If you have one and you want an extra one, you pay for that. That only makes sense. And maybe as part of that exploration, maybe, and I don't know how we keep the carts that come in, whether some can be refurbished or not. Like, I don't know any of that. But again, I think I just from those comments, I think it might be it might be good to at least explore the options and see if there is something that we may be able to do. Because the other thing too, I mean, I know we want to try to keep in line with the other two towns, and that makes sense. But doesn't the town of Shelburne charge a separate amount for garbage collection? Like, it's like, garbage tax, and we don't charge that. So I think there are some variables as well, just to be considered. Councillor Kuhl.
I agree with the deputy warden in the sense that I've watched even my own green card. When some of the guys come in, I found mine in the middle of the street. Mm-hmm. And I found them in the ditch. And I know they've been thrown there by those emptying them. And if they're broken like that, I can't see us not replacing them at no at a charge. I can't see us charging someone to replace those. But again, if there's like a second or a third, I think we should, if not even just at cost, even add a little to it. You know.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Councillor Sutherland has her hand raised.
Okay, so we'll go to Councillor Sutherland and then Councillor Thorburn Irvine and then our CAO. Go ahead, Councillor Sutherland.
Hi there. I agree with Councillor Wagner and Councillor And you also got to remember, some of these elderly people aren't fixed sometimes. They can't afford it. I know it doesn't sound like much, but $46 can be a prescription for them. So that's why I'm kind of strongly believe that they should be replacing if they're broken for our residents in the community.
Okay. Thank you for that. Councillor Thorburn Irvine.
Thank you. I think this has already been echoed, but I would just weigh in support of the sentiments around aligning with our neighboring municipal units. And I would certainly leave it to staff in terms of the decision on replacement. But I've seen abuse, and I'm going to go on record to tell you that I've got two green carts. I got two green carts because I picked one up on the road, and I only use one green cart. So I'm happy I'm serious. I'm happy to donate my extra green cart. So, you know, when we have to pay for things, we respect them more. And so I would be in favor. We don't want to be chucking out 9,400 green carts free. Sensitivity to what Paula said, but we want to eliminate the abuse aspect of carts.
Yeah, and I think you do that by having, like I said,
people pay.
If we ask council to or staff to explore this, then right. There would be parameters around that, so that you're not coming in every other week asking for a new green card. You get one free one, perhaps in a 5-year term or whatever. Right. That's just an example, putting that out there. CAO, thank you.
Thank you. Warden. I'd like to express my concern about any kind of tracking system. I don't think it's something that is feasible. I don't, you know, like, for example, if someone sells the house and a new person comes in and the person that sold the house takes the green card away, it's impossible to track something like that. My advice to council is if you want to replace broken carts, then just give staff direction, replace them, you know, without sort of having a stipulation that you get one every 5 years and that, because that requires tracking. But rather than putting the onus on us to come up with an idea, I'd like to get direction from council today, because we need your direction in order for us to go to the two other units to say, this is what our council wants. Are you in alignment with this? Because if we come to you with the recommendation, we wouldn't have even talked to the other two units.
No, but we would be, the expectation would be for staff to do the research on it, to come up with perhaps different options that we could explore.
But I don't have a problem at all with charging for an extra bin, right? Mm-hmm. I think everyone, from what I can see here around the table, everyone seems to be in agreement with that. But in terms of tracking, let's say replacement bins or broken bins, and that I'm not in favor of that. I think from an administrator point of view, it'd be very difficult to do that. I would like to get direction from council if you're okay with the idea of just replace it at our cost or at a reduced cost. I don't know.
Me?
I don't know that I would. I'd have to think about that because we're trying to come up with a way to provide the best service to our residents, but at the same time have those parameters so that there isn't abuse of that. So we have to think of some way to do that if we're going to explore this. Deputy Warden and then Councillor Richardson.
I think if they're bringing back a broken green card, we replace it. If they haven't got one to bring back to get a new one, then they're buying it.
They're going to say
and maybe it's
the garbage truck that picked it up or someone took it or
but if we
still, whatever.
If we put it out there that the only way that a green card is replaced free of charge to them is if the broken one is returned for a new one.
And I just say most people will not put a used green card in their car and not everyone has a truck. So what they'll be doing is they'll be calling our staff and asking for personal door-to-door service for us to pick up the green card and to deliver the new one. That's a huge amount of staff time and gas and resources to deliver a green card. With the new green carts, we have them here at the municipal unit, clean, put together, stored in the shed. People just stop in and get one at the front desk. No work on our public works behalf at all. No gas or travel time. They just stop and pick up a clean one and they fit in your trunk.
I think years ago, what happened is if public works were going to a certain community at a time, they would drop one off on the way or something like that to eliminate
and
that.
With that, sometimes in some of the communities that could be several weeks before someone had a reason to travel that way. And it perhaps became a situation where staff was planning some travel time to drop off carts.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
To meet expectations of residents when in fact they may have had some other duties to do in their roles.
Right. Okay. Councillor Richardson. Oh, sorry, CEO, did you?
No,
okay, you're good. Councillor Richardson.
My suggestion was exactly what the deputy warden had come out with, and I'm sorry, but the onus, if you have a broken card and you want it replaced, then it's up to you to bring it back. I'm not comfortable throwing the door open and saying you get a green card free status. So it would be on the onus to bring it back to the head of our public waste or our waste diversion or whatever, and say, can you replace this?
Yeah.
And
well, I think
the onus is going to be on the resident and they have to take some onus.
Yeah. And I think that comes back to some accountability as well.
Councillor Sutherland has her hand up.
Okay. Councillor Sutherland.
Yes, I agree that there has to be onus on the property owner to bring their own green card back. That shouldn't be our responsibility. If we've agreed to give them a free one, then they can go bring us a broken one back.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Shand?
I agree as well. If we have a policy that states if you return with a broken one, we replace it, end of story. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, or I can't, or I whatever. If the policy is this, then we have something to stand behind. So when you make a call, a resident calls to the waste diversion coordinator or whatever, the answer is simply, this is what our policy states. We're not able to bring that to you. I have a policy to back that up.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments or direction for staff? CAO?
Okay, so just for clarity's sake here, do we have consensus on the first one being that if you buy or want a second one, you pay for it?
Absolutely.
Okay, and then in terms of a broken cart, we have a policy put in place whereby the resident brings it in and they get a replacement for free.
Yes.
Okay, so
or they can buy one and pick it up.
Absolutely.
Right? You can buy one and pick it up. You can return one and get a free one. Or you pay for an extra one.
Okay, so the next step for us would be to then take that to the two other towns and see if they would be in alignment with that. So that'll have to go to their councils. And then whatever we get back from them, we'll then bring it back to council for a final decision.
Yep. Yep. Deputy Warden, but it will still be up to us if we want.
And that's what I was going to say, because
regardless.
These units are doing their own thing with their waste.
Yeah.
Department, because the town of Shelburne charges a waste tax. We don't.
Yes.
So, and if the town of Lawport and the town of Shelburne are putting a 50% increase on their cost of their carts, we're not.
Yeah.
So I think that parameters is our decision, basically what we want to do with our residents.
Okay, so do you want to just go ahead with this and we'll get that new policy in place and then?
I think since we already have a meeting next week with our
maybe
neighboring units, let's just maybe have a chat about that in the meeting. And then we can talk to staff and go from there.
Okay, so we'll come back to council with a staff report for final approval on a policy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everyone is consensus with that?
I just, one more thing.
Yeah.
When we say final approval on a policy, are we looking for a formal written adoption of council policy or are we looking for an internal operations policy? Because I think that's two different.
Yeah, I think if it's internal,
it's fine.
That's fine, but it's at the direction of council.
Sure.
Okay, we're good?
Awesome.
Thank you for that. Moving on to monthly building report, and that was a wonderful report to see. That's, I think it was five new dwellings for the month of April. Yes. So the number of permits, of course, is down a little bit, but certainly the construction dollar amount is significant, I would suggest, for the month of April. So wonderful to see. Any questions or comments on that item? If not, we'll move on to protective services and the REMO bylaw first reading, and that's Ms. Bell. Welcome. Good evening.
So the origin of this document here in my staff report, this is already the E300 bylaw that was presented in September, I believe. So this was already passed by council. As discussed here in the staff report, there were some recommendations by the province that we make some changes to the document so it aligned with their documentation. These changes have been made and provided for you to review for acceptance.
Okay, there is a prepared motion. If someone would like to make that, please. Deputy Warden?
Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne is recommended by REMO approve revised bylaw E-300.
Thank you. Is there a seconder?
I'll second.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? I think this one is pretty straightforward for us. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Thank you very much for that. And we'll move on to administration. And we just lost our CAO for a moment. So we'll move on to court. Oh, okay. Thank you. Sorry.
So basically, it's just the Joint Services Board Exploration Committee. You guys approved, council approved the members of the committee back in October at the council meeting, and draft terms of reference have been attached for council to review and approve.
Thank you very much for that, Nicole. And that's a pretty straightforward terms of reference as well. I don't know if anyone has any questions on it, but there is a prepared motion if someone would like to make that. Councillor Shand?
Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne approve the attached Joint Services Board Exploration Committee terms of reference.
Thank you. Is there a seconder?
I'll second.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? It's a pretty straightforward terms of reference. Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Okay, moving on to committee reports and warden update. Are there any committee reports to bring forward this evening, Councillor Thorburn?
Oh, sorry, Warden. You just skipped. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I went right through to committee reports and missed the correspondence completely. We have two items under correspondence. First is a thank you letter from the Shelburne and Area Chamber of Commerce, which is always nice to receive. And I know they have an AGM coming up soon. I believe it's June 10th, which is our council meeting night. Next is the Minister of Municipal Affairs, a letter notice of provincial actions affecting municipalities. And that was a pretty substantial letter. I think it was 5 or 6 pages of changes that we are to expect in the upcoming year, fiscal year. I don't know, CAO, if you wanted to talk to any of or speak to any of the items that were included.
Just at a very high level, all of our directors went through the letter, and we did identify a number of the items in there that we believe are going to impact us. All of them were our protective services.
Okay.
So fire services, RCMP, and there was one other, I forgot.
Something on traffic control as well, or traffic authority or yeah. Something like that, I believe.
It basically all comes down to that. The challenge for us is, we don't know what the cost implications are going to be because mm-hmm. they haven't given us any information on
no.
what that could be. I mean, there's been hints. I mean, for example, when you were at the recent conference, there was hints that the RCMP might be actually cheaper,
mm-hmm.
But they haven't given us any numbers, so it's hard to say.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, and a number of the other councillors had attended that conference as well, I believe we were supposed to hear something back from the minister October 1st. Yeah. And he did signal that we were going to be happy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he did. He did state that a couple of times, but he didn't elaborate on that. So we really don't know. And there's a long ways for, you know, time between now and October. So, and of course, some of these items that are listed here in the letter by the minister, you know, they'll probably impact municipalities in different ways as well. So I guess it's kind of a wait and see at this point, but just to the CAO's point, you know, there's many issues outlined in this letter that we're going to have to be, I guess, on top of the next year. Okay, now we can move on to committee reports and warden update. Are there reports to discuss? Councillor Thorburn Irvine?
Just one. There was a NRCan climate adaptation intermunicipal learning session today through Zoom, led by Emily Cohen. And so Matt Delorme from AIM Network and other speakers. We're discussing projects that have been successful in the public sphere and the Mahone Bay vegetative front in front of the three churches. It was a successful example of that. So there was a few of those discussed. There was discussions on risks, for example, into any municipal unit as our election cycles, you know, inevitably occur. The drop in initiative on these kinds of projects, how do you bridge between election cycles, etc. Mm-hmm. So it was all very good. And of course, it's not this group, but it's the other group with that's led by Molly, with Shelburne and Barrington leading toward public engagement on our climate files. So it was a good meeting. And the next one is in June 17. And NSFM conference was excellent.
Attended the NSFM conference and it was very good. I enjoyed listening to the deputy minister about the police services and that sort of thing. That was really good. We did meet last night with the Economic Growth Committee and that was a really great meeting. We will not be meeting in June, but we'll meet again in July, and I'm sure that the warden will give a little more thorough update in her correspondence.
Councillor Richardson, thank you.
also participated in the NSFN conference. I guess it would be the time to say that the speakers were very good communicators. Mm-hmm. It's not often that you have people in that position that they have the knowledge and sometimes can't communicate it to the public. And I think it is a great presentation by all those participated. Also participated in the Economic Development Committee last night.
Oh, Councillor Shand.
I attended the Shelburne County Arena Association meeting, which was they're reviewing the budget to present to council for this year. So they're getting that ready. And I also attended the conference, which I have to say was very engaging. I'm very glad I had the opportunity to go. Walked away with a lot more knowledge than when I walked in, and very much looking forward to the next one.
Great. Thank you. Okay, so back on April 24th, Friday, April 24th, I attended the Youth Summit at the NSCC in Yarmouth, which was just an absolutely fantastic opportunity to listen to our high school students and to get their views. And I was just so impressed with their knowledge of local events, and they were so engaging and just and very candid, and but just so open to have that conversation. And I know other elected officials who attended, they really felt the same way. They couldn't believe just how engaged they were, and the desire to be part of the decision making and shaping the community really is what come out of it. So I think they have a great deal to contribute to the conversation moving forward, and I hope that we find ways to support and empower them to ensure that their voices are being heard. Excuse me. And on April 28th, I delivered smile cookies with Mayor Tanney and with staff from both the town and municipality. And as others have already mentioned, I attended the NSFN conference as well with the Deputy Warden and Councillors Richardson, Thorburn, Irvine, and Shand. And I think Councillor Richardson's points were spot on. The deputy ministers and the ministers who were there were wonderful communicators. And I think they had all of our attention who were in that room for that day. And all of the slide presentations are on the NSFM website for those who want to have a review of them. There's a lot of information that was contained in them. And so they talked about, so just some of the highlights, I guess. So were the municipal success stories. There were updates from the Department of Communities, Culture, Tourism, and Heritage. There was a very interesting session on West Hants drought program, and updates, of course, from the Department of Emergency Management, Environment, Climate, and Resource Development, and the Nova Scotia Policing Review. And we've already made mention about Minister Armstrong making the comment a couple of times about the October 1st date, and that municipalities would be happy to hear from him at that point. So we'll see what that means. And out of all of the slides that were presented, there was one that really stuck with me. And that was the one regarding the summer 2026 weather outlook. And what was written there, and I wrote it out, was as of April 2026, about 24% of Nova Scotia is classified as being in drought, with an additional 46% considered abnormally dry. Conditions are most pronounced across large parts of southern and central Nova Scotia. Dry conditions require, of course, all of us to remain vigilant, take precautions to prevent fires, and support ongoing efforts to address drought conditions. So, as I said, that slide really just stood out for me, of course, with everything that we've gone through in previous years. And then, of course, at our last evening, we had the economic growth meeting, And there was discussion on the Hearts Point and former Boy School properties, as well as surplus lands. And our CAO gave an amalgamation steering committee update as well. And the Economic Growth Committee's next meeting will be July 14th. Okay, it is now 7:24. If I could have a motion, please, to go in camera.
I'd move it.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. So we need a motion to go out of in camera.
I'll please. Move it.
At 8:36. Is there a seconder? Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. It is 8:36 and we shall adjourn our meeting for this evening. Thank you, everyone.